Has anyone really sat through the entire Pillow Talk? The interminable 1959 romantic comedy with Rock Hudson and Doris Day? Pillow Talk. To us, 50 years later, it's a joke. Just a title and a dopey song. 50 years ago? Well, somebody must have sat through it. It was in the top 10 grocers of the year, right along with Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot, Operation Petticoat, Sleeping Beauty, and of course Ben-Hur, which was number one. Pillow Talk does deliver a lot to us now, though, in the way of 1950s traditions. Wide-eyed, prudish women.
Have you any idea what it's like to be on a party line with a sex maniac?
Closeted homosexual movie stars masquerading as macho playboys.
I'd like to apologize for the way I've been acting, and I thought we could get together. Have a cup of coffee, maybe. Get acquainted.
And mistaken identity mishaps to the strains of an awful lot of pizzicato. We know now that the Pillow Talk style was on the way out, though it may not have been obvious at the time. But if anyone could have spotted the antiquated sensibilities at work there, it might have been the few people who found somewhere in New York a screening of the film Shadows, directed by John Cassavetes.
Is everybody going to sit around here all day?
Shadows was the other side of the 1959 movie coin. Black and white, improvisational in style, if not in practice, low budget, no stars, with no discernible plot.
Very stark, very emotional, aiming for inner realities.
Author Fred Kaplan writes some about Shadows in his new book about that year called 1959, The Year Everything Changed.
Shadows was shot out on the streets of New York City, following a bunch of beatniks around town, pretty much doing nothing, roaming from place to place, looking for some form of meaning, almost regardless of what it was.
Can you imagine Doris Day tackling this bit of Shadows dialogue?
Point. Jean-Paul Sartre has absolutely nothing to do with existential psychoanalysis.
Like a cigarette?
No, thank you.
The two films, the two sensibilities, couldn't have been much more at odds. For good reason, observes our 1959 specialist.
It was an era of discovery. You had the invention of the microchip. You had FDA hearings on the birth control pill. You had the emergence of sick comics like Lenny Bruce. The emergence of Malcolm X as a national figure.
It was the first time a rocket left the Earth, went up into space, and started revolving around the sun.
And I think the thing going on in that year was people breaking free of all kinds of gravitational pulls, literal and metaphorical.
Breaking free and holding on at the same time, perhaps.
59, everything was changing. Everything was evolving.
Andrew Saris has been writing about movies since those years.
According to Hollywood, Oscars, the best movie of 59 was Ben-Hur. You know, and no one would make a movie like Ben-Hur today as such an expensive spectacle. I mean, that kind of thing has disappeared.
Ben-Hur was all about numbers. 15,000 extras, 300 sets built on hundreds of acres on the outskirts of Rome, 1 million props. It grossed nearly $75 million, a fortune at the time. And what remains in our consciousness of this winner of 11 Oscars with a running time of 212 minutes? A wild chariot race. A foreshadowing, perhaps, of the action-adventure obsession to come.
This is New York. As no man has ever seen it. Empty. Deserted.
If you'd gone to see Ben-Hur in 1959, you might have seen a trailer for The World, the Flesh, and the Devil. While Ben-Hur stewed about our tortured past, this film was about our future, or lack of it. Nuclear testing, atomic bombs, and air raid shelters were very much on people's minds, and The World, the Flesh, and the Devil shows us the possible consequences of a nuclear war.
The last three people alone in the world.
A terrifying premise. This amounted to something like a genre for a while. On the Beach, star-studded and directed by Stanley Kramer, is set in the then-near future, 1964. Nuclear war. World War III, in fact, has destroyed most of the planet. Survivors in Australia and other southernmost places on Earth know they only have about another year before succumbing themselves. There can be no Hollywood happy ending to this one.
There's no people.
I wonder where they are.
Even MGM's exploitation picture, The Beat Generation, directed by Charles Haas that same year, was thinking along those lines.
You've got to go. Everybody's got to move. I mean, you can't stand still and wait for the next mushroom cloud, now you dig?
No self-respecting Hollywood beatnik was without his fears.
But there's no tomorrow, not while the sky drools radiation gumdrops.
Like Pillow Talk, it had its own theme song, sung by Louis Armstrong. It is full of the spirit of admonition. The Beats have it all wrong, says the song. And the movie.
They call you Beat Generation. You think you live as you choose. Oh, you Beat Generation. I think you headed for the blues.
In 59, you might have gone to see Odds Against Tomorrow, which addressed the rapidly changing racial issues of the day. In spring and summer, you could have seen Some Like It Hot, which bent gender in a new way.
But you don't understand, Osgood. I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Some Like It Hot was everybody's favorite 59 movie.
But my favorite movie was Hitchcock's North by Northwest.
Andrew Saris reminds us that one more mark of 59 was that the now iconic Alfred Hitchcock was vastly underrated.
Everybody liked him, but nobody took him that seriously. It was the French who got crazy about him, and then I got crazy about him.
As for me, I keep coming back to that split between the outgoing Pillow Talk world and the new one coming in, and how the culture played out 50 years ago, all of its conflicting dramas, scene by scene, on mile-wide pre-multiplex movie screens. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fischko.
There must be a boy. There must.